Well, this is Jeff Dunlap with Trappin' Radio. I'm at the NTA in Escanaba, 2018, and I'm sitting here with Dave Duncan. I grew up, you know, knowing Dave. He's friends with my dad, you know, and trapped with him years ago. And I think a lot of Dave, always have. And, you know, just thanks for doing the interview, Dave.
Well, thank you, Jeff, for inviting me to chat along with you. Again, I definitely learned a lot about trapping from your father, and you're carrying on his tradition, and I'm really proud of that. So
yep, they because you've, I mean, I've known you since I was a little boy, and you've trapped forever, but you would trap long before you know that. How'd you get into the trap?
So the story is, you know, like about 9 years old, you know, getting into the library and checking out a book, and it was a book about mountain men, you know, of course, the classic mountain man, you know, Jim Bridger, and So I read that book from cover to cover, and I said, man, that is what I want to be, you know. I'm sure a lot of trappers have that same legacy. And so then at about 12 years old, my neighbor, good friends of ours, bought a farm. It was about 2 miles outside of town, lived in a small farming town in southern part of Michigan, and there were traps on the farm, and this guy wasn't a trapper, but he said, hey, Dave, take those traps. And there was a pond, and it had muskrat houses in it, and so he gave me the traps and let me trap. So that first year, of course, my dad was instrumental, and either I had to walk 2 miles or he had to drive me out there, but lots of times I just walk out to check traps. Caught 9 muskrats and 1 female mink. And I know I sold the mink for $5. This would have been in 1956.
That was a real $5, not like
$5, which would probably be like $50 today, anyway.
Big money for a kid.
It was. And the muskrats, probably the top price was $1 something. Sold them to Sears and Roebuck. Sears and Roebuck. And so I took that money, and then I bought traps. And then I started, you know, running my own trap line. I was fortunate because there was a stream, Sand Creek, that was within a short walking distance from our house. And I've always been on the stream anyway, even before I was trapping. So I was fortunate. I had a ready-made trap line. There's a lot of other kids in town that did some trapping, but I never had an issue, conflicts with any of the other trappers. Going back, I was probably less than 9 years old, and my dad was an outdoorsman. He wasn't a trapper, hunter, fisherman, or whatever. And it probably would have been like in 1951 or 52, and some kids, boys, older boys in town, had a trap line. They went out and they ended up catching a buck mink, you know. But none of them knew how to skin a mink or whatever, so they brought it to my dad.
Yep.
To skin it. And as a young boy, I watched, you know, this thing. So they would have sold it for big money, you know, then. I mean, $50 or something of that nature.
Yep.
Mink was king in those days. So
they, like when you're talking about, I've heard other guys talk about like selling the Sears Roebuck and stuff. How would you do that?
Well, they had a pamphlet, and I somehow got a hold of it, and I still have it. It's classic. Showed you how to put up your fur, and we just sent them by mail somehow to Sears and Roebuck, I think in Chicago, and then they graded them. Of course, you're never happy with the way they grade things, but I think they were fair. They were fair.
Yeah.
But I don't think there was that many years after that they actually continued to do that. I think once I got into trapping, then I found a local fur buyer, and I took all my fur to him. But
like, would you buy the traps and everything, like off of Sears Roebuck and all that, or were you just buying?
No, I would. I got Fur Fishing Game right away, obviously, and O.L. Butcher, E.J. Daly, all the Hall Baker, all, you know, I sent for all their catalogs. I would anxiously wait till the catalog got. And I'm gonna, like I said, I'm gonna gift you with some of those catalogs.
No, that's awesome, because I love the trap and paraphernalia.
So I bought my traps from either Oil Butcher is probably where I bought them from.
All the guys of legendary status today, you know.
So me, I didn't, you know, 12 years old I started. Well, I continued trapping more and more each year. But I think the best year, I think I was like 15 years old. And like catching a mink was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that year, and I had my dad to help me, drive me around. I didn't have anybody to teach me how to trap. All I had was for Fish and Game or trapping books that I could get my hands on. And I ended up catching 10 mink, which was, you know, phenomenal.
Yep.
I mean, I took them to the fur buyer there, and I had five males and five females. And I got $18 for the male and $9 for the female. So, you know, that'd be like 180 bucks anyway for the male.
You were rich.
I didn't know it. I didn't know it. I mean, when you're a kid,
no.
I had money. I was working on the farm, started at 12 years old for 50 cents an hour.
Yeah.
So I did have money, but typically I take the money and buy gifts for Christmas or invest in more trapping.
Like most, you know, like me, you know, probably the same way with you, where you were going through like it was a special time in your life that you didn't even realize how special it was. Now you look back on it, it's like you wish you'd appreciate it. I have tons of them, you know, where I wish I'd have appreciated it at the time, but you know, it was a special time.
Well, I think the fraternity of trappers, or the fellowship between trappers, and I say this with all honesty, I've never met a trapper I didn't like. I mean, I think, I don't know what it is about the character of trappers. Typically, they understand being close to Mother Nature and appreciating the gifts that are given to us. So, no, I have a special affinity. So once you got into the Trappers Association, I met your dad. He was the president of the Zone 3 Trappers Association in Michigan. And I would go to the fur auctions, obviously, and then I started secretary treasurer. So your dad and I, you know, helped run the association. And so there's a story. It's kind of an interesting one. Your dad, you know all this, obviously, but Wes Grant, he is my mentor. Legendary in my mind, mink trapper in southern Michigan, and or any kind of fur he was, you could trap anything anyway. So your dad and I went out into the area where state land where we're going to trap, and Gary was going to trap certain streams, and he assigned me these other streams to trap. Well, I found out later that he had made a pact with Wes that, you know, Wes had his trapping streams, and he was going to teach your dad, but Gary was supposed to trap on his streams. So I mean, it was fair game. He sent me into there, and I did the trapping. So anyway, I set up this one stream. It's
which
comical.
Which technically didn't break the agreement.
It didn't. No, technically it didn't. But anyway, so the Wes was trapping. Obviously, so there was an area, a country store, where everybody always stopped in to get coffee and Big Al's. Anyway, so I'd set up the stream. And I found a really deadly blind set for mink, you know, and I had set my trap in there. And lo and behold, I left my axe there. I don't know how I could have done that. But anyway, so we stop in the Big Al's, and Big Al says, well, yeah, Wes was in here, and somebody is on his trap line and has left an axe there. And he says, on top of that, Wes was in there, he was going to set his trap right where he always set it, stuck his hand down there, and got caught in a trap. And it had this Dave Duncan's name on it, you know? And so so Wes had my trap, or had my axe. So then it gave me an excuse. I went to Michigan Center, I looked and went and got my axe. So then I met Wes.
Mm-hmm.
And we were friends from then on, you know?
Yeah.
Can't speak more highly of Wes. He taught me so much.
Yeah. Think about what we were talking yesterday. It's like I'd go to the ice cream shop down to Jackson, Michigan, and I'd run. For some reason, in my mind, every time I went there, I'd run into him. If it wasn't like that, probably, but you know, he was there like quite a bit.
They liked the ice cream out in Jackson.
And, he would always buy, and I got you know, really fond memories of him. And like a lot of the trappers know, I wear the black and the green, and to me, that's always the trapper's colors, you know, like the red and the black was deer hunter before he had to wear hunter's orange, and that's like the trapper's flag, you know. And I think I got that. My dad did start wearing that because of Wes and Johnny Thorpe and ones like that, and that's just always been, you know. But you know, you were influenced. So we're different generations, but we were both influenced by the same man, you know.
Exactly.
So that's pretty cool, you know.
It is.
And Yeah, and my dad always, I mean, like Wes, when my dad caught his first beaver, Wes was there, and, you know, and if, you know, some of you guys around the country might not have heard of Wes Grant, but he was a, you know, real famous Michigan trapper, and, I mean, and back, and he was, you know, like, we were talking yesterday, and you made a real point that really stuck with me, is that, what did you call him, a naturalist?
He's a naturalist.
You know, and that's really important in the trapping that a lot of guys miss. I thought that was, I thought about that for hours after you told me about that, you know, that.
If you're receptive and you, you know, want to learn, you know, he was self-taught. He could explain, you know, like how muskrat colonies interacted and how what they actually did when they left the house, and you know what were the best places to set traps just based on studying muskrats. But anything you would ask him about, and I always ask him a lot of questions about, well, what would I do in this case? So I had this situation where there was a deer that didn't get found, and a fox had come in and were feeding on it, and it was the dead of winter, obviously. I say, Wes, how would you do this? Mm-hmm. And this is a lot of years back, so maybe, I don't know what the regulations are or aren't today, but he said, well, that's pretty simple. Okay, so the fox are going to feed on the back end of the deer. Okay, what you do is you pull some of the deer fur, could be a number two or whatever, and use the deer fur to bed your trap, and wire the trap to the hind leg of the deer, and you'll catch the fox. Sure enough, I did that. Hmm. Came back the next day probably and had this brilliant cherry red fox. And I took it to our auction, you know, mm-hmm. and there was a fur buyer there that was specifically looking for a cherry red fox. And mm-hmm. this was the most cherry red fox uh-huh. I'd ever caught in my life, you know. Mm-hmm. He paid me a good price for it, so I was happy.
Yeah.
Again, Wes.
Yeah. He was a heck of a guy. The good thing about where you and my dad got lucky on that was, you know, a lot of them guys didn't have somebody like that, because you know how secretive everything was back in those days.
It was just at the verge where it was loosening up some.
Yeah.
But you can imagine, you know, like in the 50s, I mean, if people made $5,000 a year, that was a good salary.
Yeah.
And if you're out mink trapping, you're getting well over 50 bucks a mink, you know. People are making a good living, and they just came out of the Depression.
Yeah.
So there was some rhyme or reason to why they wanted to make it sound be so mysterious.
Yeah. It was a feat, you know. It was like teaching somebody was actually cutting their own family's throat.
It could,
in a sense.
Yeah.
When I got into this, my dad told me, he said where he had always felt bad and made a mistake in this, and I took this to heart, was that he said when I was running the conventions and, you know, selling lures and doing all that, he says everything was still pretty secretive, you know, during that time period. He told me, he said, if you're going to go do this, he says, you got to tell everything and help every bit you can. And that was the only piece of real advice that he gave me to go out and do it, was mm-hmm. You know, just tell people and help them, you know.
And that came through in spades when I bought your trapping video on how to beginner trapper for coyote.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the open and honest and give it just exactly the way it is.
Plain and simple.
Yeah. That pays huge dividends. Jeff.
But you've been all over. I mean, you've been up to Alaska. I was out to the Pennsylvania convention last year, and I look across there, and you know, I hadn't seen Dave in years and years, and I looked across, and here he come. You know, but I felt bad because I was late in the middle of packing up, and everybody.
It was perfect.
But it was awesome seeing you out there. It was a you know, surprise, but. You know, I mean, what other, you know, like, I know, like, you were, was around, like, Houghton King, you know, with the muskrat in, you know, in that area.
Yeah, he, that was his living. He made a living. He had orchards, and, of course, in the summer, the orchards, and then in the winter, they basically trapped. I think he had also investments in some nursing home there, too, but basically, in the wintertime, that's all he did. He ran huge lines. Concentrated a lot on muskrats, but he did a lot of fox and coyote trapping, and he still wouldn't share anything. I became friends with him, and he was somewhat surprised that I was catching as many fox as I was, but we'd run into each other, crossing somewhere out in the middle of nowhere. He was running his line, I was running my line, but. Hmm.
My dad would tell stories about didn't his son trap too?
Bud.
And my dad would say, tell me about how they had the homemade canoes or duck boats or something made out of plywood.
He said I made one too.
Yeah, he said that the rats would just be piled up in them things. He said them guys were such phenomenal rat trappers.
Well, let me tell you a quick story about your dad and I. So we'd go up there to Houghton Lake. Your dad, your family, or somebody had a cabin there. So somebody,
my great grandma and grandpa.
Yeah. So Gary and I went up there. We stayed in the cabin. Okay. So we had this big event. We were going to do the Muskegon River. So it was early in the spring. We drove to this bridge, and the river's open. Your dad probably told you this story. Maybe not.
No, okay. I never heard of it.
So then we drove way heck and gone downstream to another bridge. The water's open. So we left the snow... I think we left the snow machine or something there. We only had one vehicle. And then we went back up to the bridge, put in our canoe, and headed down, merrily setting beaver traps. The further we went, the water was well below the ice froze on the bank, but further we went, the water kept getting closer and closer to where the... ice was on, and finally the river was froze shut. We could not get through. And I knew we were only about halfway.
Yeah.
So, okay. So we pulled over, and we weren't prepared to sleep out. And it would get down below 20. It was got pretty cold that night. So we built a fire, and I can't remember. I think I kind of stripped down and dried my clothes a little bit, and got some pine boughs or spruce, made a little bed thing, laid down beside the fire, and went to sleep. Your dad didn't go to sleep. He kept the fire going. Thanks for him. But woke up in the morning, and there's about like 2 foot of snow, but froze enough so you can actually walk on top of the snow.
Mm-hmm.
So we walked out.
And this is pre-cell phone.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no cell phone.
That's
no
what
phone.
I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. So we walked out, all the way to the, got to the snowmobile, took the snowmobile and dragged the canoe out, and then we got back to the cabin. It was probably about 11 o'clock that next day, you know. Well, people were already trying to track us down. I can't remember why. Probably your mother or somebody.
Probably.
And she, no doubt, would have got a hold of Wes. And so what did Wes say? He said, well, those boys, they just chewed off more than they could handle. Give them till, about noon tomorrow. they'll be coming out.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're going to send the state police after us, you know. Sure enough, we come out of there, you know. Yeah.
Being older now, we're like, you know, then you thought, well, he just knew we'd be okay. Now,
I slept, okay. Gary was worried. The reason Gary was worried, because he knew that they knew, his family knew that he had gone out on this.
Mm-hmm.
My family didn't know what the heck I was doing.
Yeah.
They didn't know
yeah.
That I was going to be home or not be home.
Yeah.
So I was comfortable, and I had a good night. I slept all night.
Yeah.
Your dad kept the fire going. We did catch a beaver, though.
That's the great thing about trapping. It's like I always tell everybody, and in the end, all you have is the pictures and the memories. So you got to go out and make them,
Exactly.
And
there's more good memories than bad memories.
Since my dad's passed, I've heard more. Talking to guys, I've heard more stories about being stuck with him somewhere. He always seemed to be stuck somewhere, or just having to sleep on the bank or something.
Your dad and I went to a lot of conventions together.
Yep.
Around the country.
Yep.
Yeah.
I know he always talked highly of you. He was like excited when he seen you up to Alaska, and you guys wanted to have dinner and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he always was real happy. You know, the you know, your guys' friendship trap, and like I found them pictures of you guys when you guys were up trapped in the UP. You know, and you know, with all the mink pictures, and you see me show on my Facebook and stuff. And you know, I mean, how did you guys end up going up to the UP and, you know, trapping?
I know how it happened.
Because they, I know, because they lived in southern Michigan, and
I kept moving.
You know, at that point, you were there, though.
Still in
you
the
know,
state.
Yeah. And but they, you know, so they would have traveled like 300 miles or so to go up the UP.
Oh yeah. Okay. Know. So here I know what it is. So Wes and his trapping buddy, back before the Great Depression, they went to the Upper Peninsula. Muskrats were worth something, and they were trapped, and they made a good fur catch, and they came out. I'm going to say it was 1927 or something in that range, and the stock market had crashed. And their fur wasn't worth nothing, hardly, you know. But they had spent all the winter, and Wes told the story. Well, you know, they lived off the land, you know.
Uh-huh.
And if all they had was muskrat to eat, that's what they ate, you uh-huh. know. They stayed in this little cabin, and they trapped the UP. And Wes would say, oh, this one night he came in, and his partner was cooking up some muskrat, and Wes had shot a deer, so he had venison. Guys, here the muskrats right out in the snow. They start cooking venison, you know. Well, anyway, so, you know, Gary, your dad and I, you know, we idolized Wes, you know. Mm-hmm. So we had to do a UP trapping.
Yep.
And it was great.
Yeah, sitting around down there talking to Wes, and it built it up in you.
But on top of that, you know, your dad was friends with every trapper, and there's a lot of influential trappers, you know. Earl Renshaw, you could correct me, but I don't think I'm wrong, should be the father of the National Trappers Association.
Yeah.
And in 1971, when we went to the UP, Eckerman, we looked up Earl, and Earl, we stayed in one of his log cabins there. He had a house, but he had some log cabins. I mean, you probably could throw a cat down out through the wall, but
yeah.
We stayed in these cabins. That's where we stayed mm-hmm. with Earl Renshaw, and had an opportunity to talk to him. And he worked hard to organize the National Trappers Association.
Yeah.
I don't know if the name Earl Renshaw comes up much anymore, but
you don't hear it a lot. But I my dad would always bring up Earl's name because he thought a lot of Earl. He said that Earl was probably one of the, and that's probably what they needed back then. He said he's probably one of the best promoters. He said he was always writing stuff and promoting.
Handwritten letters.
And like the fur brigades and stuff, my dad never said that, but the way he always described it was almost like, because my dad went down to Georgia in a Earl Renshaw.
I was always going to go with him one time, but I never got away.
And, I heard lots of stories, some of them not fit for the air, but as most trapping trips turn into. But he would talk about Earl, and he said that everybody looked at Earl as a great trapper, but he said Earl was more a better manager. He was like Ashley. Ashley was on the fur things, because Earl had the whole setup down there, and then everybody go out trapping, come back, and, you know, Earl was there, you know. But my dad said that Earl always liked to drink wine, and he had this wine down there, and one of the guys who was staying there caught this little beaver and brought it back, mm-hmm. and they had it in the thing, and it got loose, and it chewed a hole in whatever wine that Earl had. So, you know, that's what I love about trapping. I love them stories. You know, I mean, them stories are just mm-hmm. awesome to me. And
so when I was catching lots of beaver and otter and whatever, you know, I basically went to the North Bay. That's where I went. And mm-hmm. I went to a few of the conventions. I actually took Wes up to a Tonterra Trappers convention, and Lloyd Cook was the president. Lloyd had a beaver that he raised. He mm-hmm. would bring it to some of these conventions, a beaver. He's the only problem with it is in the house, it was always chewing off the legs and stuff of the furniture and whatever.
Yeah.
He raised a little beaver. His wife would have it. They would hold it.
Yeah.
Lloyd Cook.
Them little beavers, when we did that one time, it's like, them things are a pain in the neck. I guess that's because they're not meant to be raised in a bathtub. But
no.
Some of the stuff my mom, I mean, you know my mom, I mean, she put up with some real horror stories. I mean, me and my dad caught a beaver one time, it was small, we brought it back, and she let us put it in the bathtub, and, you know, it was going to the bathroom in there, and then in the middle of the night, it's like, choo-choo-choo-choo in this cage, and we turned it loose. You know?
Oh, yeah,
but, you know, I mean, I think a lot of guys got them little beaver stories, you know, but... They are horror stories.
But I learned something on that. You know, the beaver has a little, I don't know what it is, something that crawls around there and eats the dander or whatever in their fur. It doesn't cause the beaver any problem.
Uh-huh.
They coexist, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think you actually ever see them unless you got a live beaver.
Because
I've never seen any of them on a beaver that I've got. They must vacate.
Huh.
But there is a little... critter that is beneficial for the beaver that keeps their
It's like a little mite or something.
Yeah, I mean it was sizable. I mean, he showed it to us. Lloyd Cook was an expert on that, obviously. But I don't know how much time we got left. But there's like hundreds and hundreds.
Oh, we got
of
lots
stories.
Of time.
You know, Alaska was. I say it's my living the dream.
Mm-hmm.
And I still am, but there's a website called Michigan Sportsman, and they have a forum on their Trappers Forum, and I ended up becoming the moderator for that.
Yep.
And
yeah, I'm a member of that.
Yeah. So I went to Alaska, then I wrote like 30-some blogs, and I sent them in there, so they're all posted. And so if anybody ever wanted to look at this Alaskan Living the Dream trapping, where I went in the 1st of October and basically didn't come out till the end of April, living off the grid with a trapper, Brad Parsons, originally out of Wisconsin. He'd lived there near Glen Allen, between three different mountain ranges in a valley. It's an area that really gets cold. Typically, it gets 60, 70 below zero. so I worked for about a year in Valdez. So I obviously going to look up the trappers around. So
oh, yeah.
I became friends with Brad. And when I was no longer working there, I decided I'm going to take a year off. And so I convinced Brad to take me in. And I spent the whole winter with him on his trap lines. And there's 30 blogs with pictures. And you just have to Google David Duncan Alaska trapping. And you'll find this Michigan Sportsman's blog if you ever wanted to look at the pictures or read it. But Brad wanted, he'd been there like 15 years. He never caught a wolverine. I had a passion. I wanted to catch a wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
We'd see some wolverine tracks here and there.
Yep.
But we looked off into he pointed to the south, the Chukach Mountains. And he said, now, if there's any place that we could really go for wolverine, he says, I'd talked to other guys that were going to go, but they always backed out. I said, well, if we make the plan, this guy is not going to back out.
No.
So we had snow machines, and so we did go like 40 miles back in there and set up a camp and run a line, caught wolf and lynx and fox. Didn't do too well on Pine Marten there, but he had other lines back where his normal cabin is. So we went in and set up a spike camp the first night. It's got to 20 below. When the season just opened. The season doesn't open until into November.
Mm-hmm.
They make sure the fur is prime.
I was surprised when I started looking at their laws how late.
Yeah,
because you'd think as cold as it gets, and, like, you know,
the fur is prime. Let me tell you, because like I said, the opening day of season, we were back there in a spike camp. It was 20 below zero, and then we ran and we cut three wolf tracks, and made some sets for them, and then the wolverine made some sets for them. And anyway, we set it up, and then we came back out, and then we went. Back in, we left a lot of supplies there, gas and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then we came back in and set up a big tent. Well, it's called a 10-man squad tent. It's an army tent with a liner in it, wood stove, and then we trapped for a little over a week there, staying right in there. And we were on somebody else's trap line, but and the guy stopped in and we talked to him, and he was okay. We left them a whole lot of bait when we left. So,
yeah, they're pretty sensitive up there.
Yeah, they are.
That.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's their line. We didn't do much of a dent in his fur. But Yeah, well, every day we went out, there was only one day, it was like 55 below zero, and the wind was blowing pretty good, so we said, well, let's stay in.
That's a mite nippy.
Yeah. Yeah, but in that blog, you'll see pictures of all of that carryings on them.
Yeah, I seen I looked up the pictures when, I think it was during the period, like when you put them up and stuff. Yeah, it was been a few years ago, and I remember looking at that picture. I'll have to go back and look at them again.
Yeah, it's got to be eight years ago or more.
So. Time slips by, I guess, you know.
When you're having fun.
Yeah, I guess. So. My whole life has seen it slip by, but no, but I always love going down south trapping. You know, I mean, I used to go down there with my dad years ago. It's like going to Alaska. You know, I'm planning to go, like I told you about going up there. I'm planning on going up trapping this year up there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't tell you that?
No.
Yeah, I'm going up to my brother's in probably December, January, going to go trapping up there.
Well, maybe you did. Are your brother's a little south of Fairbanks or where?
In Selcha.
Selcha, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to go up there and...
You got you all lined up? And
I had sent my dad traps and stuff up there through the years, and, you know, his knees were bad and he couldn't really do much, but... the spirit was always there, just the body couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. So I'd send him traps and he'd work on them and stuff. And, you know, I'd send him snare making stuff. It basically kept his mind busy doing that. And so all that stuff's still up there. And, so basically I'm going to send some more stuff up.
You got
up,
a place to stay. That's
the
main thing.
That's the main thing. I got trucks
and
snowmobiles.
How about a machine?
I got snowmobiles and, you know, everything.
And what else can I...
But,
well,
but my thing
solo
is
not always that good, so
no,
got to be careful.
But when I'm looking, everybody's like, "You want to catch a wolf? You want to catch a wolverine?" My main thing is I got them in that area. They're like a silver fox, mm-hmm. but they were catching the black ones right around there. Them real jet black
ones.
There's
a higher percentage there than about anywhere.
Yeah, and that like trips my trigger.
It does. I never have caught a silver fox.
No, but
probably could have in Northwest Territories, but only the Aboriginals can trap in Northwest Territories.
Oh, really?
But I had a thing going. I was going to be an instructor, and I had all the paperwork filled out. I could have set a line out, and I did hold some seminars for some of the Aboriginal kids. It was a youth group, a church youth group that I. Sponsored about every weekend to go out and teach them things about trapping.
Yeah.
Seems weird, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But young people, even there, don't get an opportunity to...
Hmm. Yeah.
So basically it was going out and telling them about... Cause we didn't set any traps, we just went out and read all the signs.
Yeah, because they're just thinking about it. You think like, they would just be raised into it, but I guess they're just like any other kids, you know, I mean...
Well, one thing I did, for survival, I said, okay, I gave them each of them just one match, and I said they got to get a fire started.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have any trouble.
Really?
They know how to make a fire.
Huh. Yeah, if I had one...
I didn't even have to
coach had
them.
One match and had to build a fire, it'd probably be no fire.
So, no,
I was raised better than I am now, you know? That Alaska, my thing I fell in love with Alaska just like I did Louisiana. I seem to fall in love real easy with spots when I'm out trapping. And, but it's just, because you've been there, it's just different there. It's kind of like it's more wild than what it ever was when I lived in northern Michigan, but it's like how I grew up there, and it looks like when I'm driving through the UP, it kind of looks like that in spots where it reminds me of it, you know. And
Brad would say this is, you know, starvation country, you know.
Yeah,
it is. It's hard for even the animals and whatever to make a living. You got to cover a lot of ground.
Yeah.
Brad is a good trapper, and but anyway, I told one more. I don't know how many stories we can tell, but I can tell another story. So I spent the whole winter with Brad. Yeah, so we'd run after we did that special trip, then we went back to his normal lines. He had three different lines, kind of a southeast, a northwest, and an east line. Each of them were about 170 miles long. It'd take us a day to run them in a snow machine. And I'd set some wolf snares. And this one day, this morning, I said, well, Brad, I'm going to go out and check these wolf snares. It wasn't that far, you know. It was probably 15, 20 mile, or maybe a 20 mile loop, let's say. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'd been with him long enough, so he said, okay, you let me go on my own. Okay. So lo and behold, what should happen? Snag a gosh darn cow moose right by the nose, you know, my wolf snare. So I had studied enough, and if there's any Alaskan trappers, well, there are somewhere here at the Marty, I guess I could ask him if he's snaring, but technically you should have a breakaway snare or whatever, so that should not happen. But so there is a way. I mean, if they're a full adult moose stand 7 foot at the shoulder, you know, so even the cow is a big animal.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, well, I want to try to let her loose, you know, and so you got to get a coat or something over their eyes. So I made one attempt, and I wasn't successful. You know, it's pretty tricky. Always tried to set. I was careful. I said, well, if she charges me or something, I got to get an escape route. You know, so I was always conscious of how I was going to get away. And she didn't charge me or anything. And then I tried the second time and still couldn't get it. Mm-hmm. So I was in the process of the third time, and she had had enough of it. And I wasn't paying close enough attention to my escape route, and she did charge me. And she had her nose butted me right in my left shoulder. The next thing I know, I'm picking myself up out of the snowbank. I mean, I'm well over 200 pounds, and she had no trouble throwing me airborne for probably 20, 30 feet, you know. And so then I decided, which is all within the regulations. I mean, it's unfortunate, but so I had to euthanize the moose, but the regulations, then you have to pull all your traps within a certain distance. So that's what I did.
And, that's so that them guys, so they don't...
Can't
so
use it. So they the wolves get it.
Yeah, so they don't want guy out there, you know, on purpose killing moose.
No.
And that,
no,
that's the reason why you got to pull them.
Accidental. So then the next day, we run 170-mile line. I get back to the cabin. I say, Brad, man, my arm's kind of sore. And I look at it, and it's all swollen up all the way. And, you know, you're out in the bush, and, you know, you're a macho trapper or whatever.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I think God smiled on me that day. And, maybe she called my wife and or got a hold of my wife, and somehow she called me that night. And she was livid that I'd been out there too long and I needed to come home. So I did. Next morning I had Brad drive me into Anchorage. I got on a plane, and the following night I was back in Michigan. And I wrapped my arm with a elastic bandage. I thought, well, now if the swelling goes down, it's no big deal. But in the morning the swelling was still up. So then I knew I had a circulatory problem. Went into the doctor, sent me to the hospital. I had a deep vein thrombosis. Had to get treated with blood thinner. Spent about a week getting through that. And then I had to tell my wife, I got to go back, you know. this was the middle of January, you know. So back to Alaska I went. I'm still married. That's amazing.
Yeah, trapper's wife put up with a lot.
My goodness, she's golden. And I survived. She saved my life, really. I probably would have just... toughed it out. I had a blood clot at it, probably.
Yeah, because you're back in there in the bush, and, you know, thank God for technology. Did you ever catch your wolverine you were trying to catch up there?
We sat on the wolverine, but they leave tracks, and they're gone, you know. So the best way is to find where they had a fresh wolf or a moose kill or something. And you can get in on that. I mean, there's a lot of wolverine, so
when I was
you're
up there,
have to find a place where they're working.
I seen wolverine tracks up there.
Oh, yeah.
But, there was no doubt what was.
No,
you know, it's like seeing a wolf track. I mean, there's just no doubt.
Not so much.
Yeah. But I seen the season was open for a few days while I was up there, but I seen that they some of the spots were when I was going on sled dog rides with Jason. You know, where they had the 330s buckets still. Mm-hmm. They were still on 330s weren't in them, but the, you know, because they were using 330s.
That is probably the most effective way for a wolverine.
Yeah. But,
however, and this goes to the Northwest Territories, there's good trappers, Aboriginal trappers there, and there's one that posts regularly, and I apologize. I can't remember his exact name, but anyway, he did something that I am totally amazed at. He snared a wolverine, you know.
Really?
On a dead pole, on a lever balance beam snare, and got a wolverine in a snare on a balance beam. You know, I mean, yeah. after the trips it, then it yep. raises the, yep. so it dispatches the wolverine yeah, like very humanely and very close.
It pulls it up.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's probably the only way that you could have kept a wolverine in a snare.
Yeah, they just chew out. yeah. Like, you figure a coyote will chew out, so, yeah, I mean, a wolverine with them chompers.
Yeah.
They, yeah, I went to the fur sale up there. Did you ever go to the fur sale, like in Anchorage mm-hmm. or in,
well, went into the fur buyer. I mean, I don't know where he sent his fur to.
They, but,
NDA,
it's yeah. like, you know, cause I mean, I was the same as you, raised around, the red fox, the muskrats, the mink and everything. But to go there and see where, you know, they got, say, 80 to 100 wolverines all lined up and all the Alaskan fur and stuff. I mean, it was, as a trapper, and I mean, it was like breathtaking. I mean, it was just like we were talking about the moments you didn't appreciate in your life. When I was standing there, I swear to God, I appreciated just being able to be present.
Was it in Fairbanks?
Yeah, it was in Fairbanks. It was at the North American sled dog race. My brother was our sister-in-law was racing it. So I'm splitting my time. I'm running back and forth, and I was waiting for the wolves to come up, and I'm bidding, and, you know, and I did a live feed on Trapping Talk with that, yeah. and, you know, because a lot of guys will never get to experience it, but they didn't even know what was going on, a lot of them, but it's just cool to be able to, you know, go do stuff like that. And
fox is a whole different fox.
Oh, yeah. 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 That's why I say that. Because, like, you know, it's the color phase, but they don't seem to phase. And, I mean, like, up by us, I mean, I never talked to anybody ever caught a silver fox or even a cross.
Few cross.
Yeah.
Wes caught, you know, a few cross.
But, you know, I mean, I'm looking up there at that first sale, and there's these black, silver.
You could get a chance to cross.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Brad would catch two or three every year there.
Yeah. No, but that... But it's weird how up there, you know, the stuff like they were telling me, you know, the mink are down, you know, more by the coast, and them guys catching, and I'm standing there in Fairbanks, and I'm looking at trappers on Facebook that are trapping down by Anchorage, and there's not even no snow there, you know, they're trapping open water, you know, so. But
on the ocean, yeah. Well, Valdez, it seldom in Valdez itself. Got below freezing, you know?
Yeah,
because yeah. there's just a warming effect there from the ocean. But.
The and when you lived in southern Michigan and you were really involved. Well, we're like when what was it 1982 when you were involved in the what year was the NTA in Gaylord?
I think it was 84.
84.
But I had already moved north, and so I was associated with Zone 2. And helped them with that yep. 84 convention they, Zone 2. Yeah. I was Secretary of Treasury.
But you were instrumental. You were really involved in putting on that convention and stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, part of the planning.
Yeah. Because I had talked to different dealers, like Mr. Jimmy owns RP Outdoors down in Louisiana, and I walked in there and when I was trapping down there to buy some whatever you need for trapping. You know, basically just go in there and burn up some time. And he was telling me, oh, you're from Michigan? I said, yeah. And he said, I went to a convention up there in Gaylord. And I said, yeah, I was at that one, but I was a young boy, you know. And he says, I'll tell you, he says, that was the best convention I ever went to.
We had fun, didn't we?
Yeah.
We had a big tent. And, yeah.
Yeah. No, I got fond memories of that. And you guys did a good job. I talked about that. I think I tried radio here before. About my dad took us over there, and we had to clean out the horse stalls and stuff. And we mm-hmm. were like, why don't they clean them up themselves? But like I said, now I'm like, you know, I can see why, and I'd be thankful somebody did it for me. You don't want to go and, you know, show up and have to clean out your own stall.
Well, this facility is great. I can see why the National keeps coming back here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, this has been an awesome convention. I mean, you know, and like me and my granddaughter, my thing is, like I told you, a lot of the trappers say that there's, there's no fur market, but a lot of them don't buy fur. And I always try and go and buy, like Trevor Barnes, a fur buyer in mm-hmm. Michigan. He was selling some tan fur. My granddaughter, we walked down, we bought some weasels, and she wanted to buy a coyote for her, you know, trying to promote the mm-hmm. the business, you know, because if we don't promote it ourselves, nobody else is
exactly.
going to promote it.
I mean, even kids, I think right now, you know, back when I was in school, you know, there were trappers around, but they're, be open and do show and tell, you know. This is I mean, kids are curious, you know. Yeah. They may never see a weasel pelt or a muskrat pelt.
And my granddaughter, you met her, and she's just, I mean, she's got that coyote draped around her, and she's coming down through. I mean, she thinks she's like a supermodel. She is. I mean, she's just, you know, and, you know, it's nothing better than having young kids do that. And, I mean, and the people here have been so nice to her, you know, and, you know, made her feel special. And, you know, that's what I hoped that it would happen, because I want her to, and the grandkids to be involved, because my best memories are at, you know, like conventions and stuff, because I was raised doing all that stuff. And, like I say, it didn't mean a lot at the time, but, you know, being around you and, you know, Wes, and having all those memories at the conventions, I mean, that, you know, that's brought me to where I am today. And that's the foundation.
You got to have the habitat, and there's a lot of good things going on. I just stopped at this Turkey Federation, and they're doing a lot. They're focused just on habitat.
Yeah.
And so it spins off on everything if you have good habitat.
Yeah.
So how can you, okay, I'm going to go muskrat trapping. There's got to be habitat for some muskrats.
Yeah.
So if you even get a youth set up to go, and they're dreaming every night about, you know, catching muskrats, is which we did. And even afterwards, every other dream is about anxiously going out and checking your muskrat traps.
Yep. It's the same thing. But
everybody isn't going to be a trapper. Everybody isn't going to be a fly fisherman. Everybody's not. So, yeah. So those that end up, I think, it might not be, but I almost think like a gene or something. I mean, I think I was destined to be a trapper. I don't know. My brother wasn't. I don't know. No other people in my family that are trappers.
No, they just something God instilled in you, and you know that was your take in life.
The only thing is, from day one, three older sisters, one younger brother. But my thing was, in the summertime, I got mad if the sun got up, and I wasn't up. I was very disappointed. So when the sun came up, I was up.
Yeah.
And where'd I go? I headed to the creek.
Yeah.
And I'd get back at, you know, 9 or 9:00, and everybody just getting up out of bed. So there's something that drew me. I had to be out in the woods and along the streams.
So yeah.
I had to be.
And that's the thing is that is instilled in a lot of these kids that you see running around. I mean, there's been a lot of kids here, and and some of them will take to it, and like you say, and some of them won't. But the good thing with all these people that are flowing in and out of here, every person that come through here has met trappers, and they were treated nicely. And and when it comes to some problem, they're gonna say, I met some trappers, and they were pretty nice people. You know, they weren't the wackos that the antis try and make us out to be. You know, so I think and you've seen, like, at this town up here, I mean, it's like, they love the trappers. They really do. This town, Escanaba, loves trappers. I mean, 20 miles out of town, there's signs, welcome trappers. I mean, they really wanted us here.
I mean, we went just to one place, the local brewery, and... Yeah, they were talking about it.
Yep.
Yeah, the trappers are here.
Yeah, well, we're here. We took over. I think there's some golfers in town too, but I think we beat the golfers out.
I don't know about golfers, but
they got some tournament going on in town, but I didn't see no welcome golfers. So apparently the trappers are loved a little bit more. So
Now that looks like Mr. Yoder. I don't know why.
Well, if he had a green plaid. The guy's walking by with the red and black checkered, so he's got, like we were talking about, the deer hunter colors.
He looks familiar. Yeah, he almost looks like, anyway.
But in closing, you got any final thoughts or words of wisdom, you know, for like a young trapper, how to, you know, get a mentor like you did?
Yeah, I mean, seek out the Trappers Associations and tried to get involved and volunteer because that's what they obviously need. And if there's any good trappers around, they're going to be in the association. Yep. Not all of them were, but most of them are.
Yep. And the thing is with the association, I think with a lot of guys, there's going to be politics involved. Just don't get involved in the politics.
No.
Just go there and help and set up tables. Because it's like when I go to these and set up, on the booth and stuff, I never, ever go and try and complain to anybody about anything if it isn't exactly right. Because you know what? Every one of these guys and women that are here doing this, they're volunteering. They're not making anything. They're just doing it because they love it. And, that's the spirit to have it. And it's, just be involved and don't get into politics. But they'll be there, but you don't have to be involved in it. And, the association's the only thing that keeps a trap, and when we have a problem with antis, they're the ones that fight them off. Mm-hmm. Like you guys handled it for years and years.
Yeah, and I appreciate it. Thank you, Jeff, for the opportunity to chat with you. Well, and good luck on your Alaska adventure. And I'm only a text or email away.
We'll be talking for sure on that.
And you're in a good area, Fairbanks.
But thanks a lot for doing the interview. Okay. It's a pleasure knowing you, Dave.
Yep, we'll continue to...
We'll be talking.
Yep, talking in the future.
And you guys, make sure you Google Dave and look up them pictures. And, he's on the, Michigan...
Sportsman's website.
Yep, and you can get a hold of him on there.